Vayarbalak ben Tzipor eis kol asher asa Yisrael la emori.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Balak. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 15th day of Tammuz, the 5th day of July. The Hebrew year, 5772, and the secular year, 2012. And that's the way it goes. Parshat Balak is a fairly simple sedra, as I will present it. And it could be that I've said it before, but I hope to tie it in nicely and differently with the upcoming 3 weeks. But first, Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yoh Adonai mi ya'amod, ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim la'boker, shomerim la'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem alehem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela l'ora umishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar. Amen. Parshat Balak this year coincides with Shabbat, the 17th of Tammuz. Now, we haven't had a 17th of Tammuz on Shabbat in 14 years, but it's not that uncommon. Just the way that the years are divided, and we've spoken about this with our Friday night Seder and with our Motzoi Shabbat Shavuot, and even before then with our Friday morning Purim Seuda in Yerushalayim, and a whole bunch of other things that are unique to this particular year type, which happens to be the most common year type. More than 18% of the time it happens, and yet it hasn't happened in 14 years. Add to that two types of leap years, of 13-month years, that also work out with that same kind of thing, and the percentage goes up to 28%, which is quite hefty, and yet we haven't had the situation in 14 years. Of course, 3 weeks from this Shabbat is the Shabbat of Tisha B'Av, and in the case of Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, both being fast days, and the prohibition of fasting on Shabbat except for Yom Kippur, the fast days are postponed till Sunday. In the case of Tisha B'Av, Saturday night, Sunday, and in the case of Shivasar B'Tammuz, the fasting begins in the daytime. Now, technically speaking, Parshat Balak is the weekly Torah reading. Shivasar B'Tammuz is a calendar note, and they don't necessarily have to do one with the other. But it's very unavoidable to think in terms of linking calendar dates and parsha of the week, Torah reading, and this is no exception. So let me see if I could start with an overview, a very simple overview of Parshat Balak, and then we'll transition into Shivasar Batamuz, and the three-week mournful period for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, culminating in Tisha B'Av. It goes like this. Parshat Balak has 104 verses, 104 psukim. It is subdivided into two parshiot. One very long one of 95 psukim, and then a not-so-unrelated 9-verse parsha to finish the sedra. Very lopsided, but when you take them together, you see something very important, and you get a very important message. The 95 psukim that make up the story of Balak and Bilam and their attempt, failed attempt, to curse the Jewish people, is a portion of the Torah which is quite unique in that we, the Jewish people, were not eyewitnesses to the events recorded. In other words, the norm of the Torah, since Parshat Shemot, was that there were a couple of million people who lived through servitude in Egypt, experienced, not always the same ones, a couple of million people who experienced the plagues and the exodus from Egypt, and the crossing of the Red Sea, and revelation at Sinai, and the entire sojourn in the Midbar, until entrance into the land of Israel, where you had a new nation of a couple of million people, some of whom overlapped, and they witnessed everything that took place thereafter. And this goes on generation after generation. You go back to the Torah, and you find one portion, which is one story, and you realize that none of us, not even Moshe Rabbeinu, and none of the people, were witness to the events that occurred. I am talking about the king of Moab, whose name was Balak ben Zippor, being quite fearful of this large nation Israel near its borders, and they had heard what this nation had already done to a couple of other city-states, and to Egypt, and Balak was afraid. He did some research, and as I jokingly say, he didn't have access to Google, but he did the equivalent of Googling at the time, and got a report, and found that conventional weapons, like arrows and daggers and spears and swords, would not work against the people of Israel, but the power of a prophet's words could work. And he found that the best prophet of the non-Jewish world was a fellow named Bilam ben Beor, and he was a Midianite, and that was a little bit of a hurdle that Balak had to overcome, because Midian and Moab were not friendly nations. And yet, the overriding desire to destroy the people of Israel brought them together. And the Torah describes, which I don't know if I want to go into all of the details, how a first delegation from Balak came to Bilam, and God spoke to Bilam and said, don't go with them, because the people that they want you to curse are blessed. And then a more prestigious a set of emissaries comes from Balak with greater offers of wealth to Bilam, and he sort of gets God's permission to go. but to watch what he says and only say what he's told to say. And on the way, he's riding on his famous donkey, and God allows the donkey to see an angel standing in the way, preventing Bilam from continuing on his journey with a sword in its hand. And Bilam does not see the angel. He only knows that the donkey is veering off the path and knocking it into a wall and then sitting down under him, not going any further, and he strikes the donkey 3 times. And then God gives the power of speech, whatever that means, to the donkey, who says to Bilam, "Why are you hitting me like this? What did I ever do to you to deserve it?" And there's a dialogue between the donkey and Bilam, and finally Bilam is allowed to see the angel, and there's another conversation there, and he offers to go back, and God at this point, the way we would understand it, is giving him enough rope to hang himself, so he's sent on to go, but with the warning that he cannot say things on his own, only what God puts into his mouth. And he gets together with Balak and gives instructions for the construction of 7 altars and the offering of 7 bulls and 7 rams as sacrifices. If you remember, I didn't want to go into the whole thing, but I'm going into detail here. And those sacrifices made, Bilam makes his first attempt to curse the people, and what comes out of his mouth is a beautiful description of the people and certainly nothing like a curse. And Balak is not getting his money's worth, and he's upset, and they move to another vantage point to see the people, and he tries again, and again he comes out with beautiful descriptions of the people and blessings, and certainly nothing like a curse, and it happens a 3rd time, and Balak sends him packing. Plenty of detail I'm leaving out now about what he said and what it means and whatever. The fact of the matter is, which is where I started this, is that we were totally oblivious to what was going on. 2 to 3 million people were encamped and on a hilltop overlooking the encampment of the people of Israel, unknown to the people of Israel, were the king of Moab and the chief prophet among the non-Jewish world, Bilam and Balak, Balak and Bilam respectively, not respectfully, and they are trying to destroy the Jewish people with the power of a curse, and they fail. In fact, we only know about this because God put it into the Torah, and we can therefore assume that he put it into the Torah, that we should know about it, even though we didn't witness it. And we should also know what happened right after it, which of course we did witness, unfortunately. Because these last 9 verses in Parshat Balak are the acting upon the advice of either Bilam or Balak, it's unclear whose idea this was, that the best way to attack these people is to let them kill themselves. Let them do something so foolish and so anti their relationship with God that God will get angry at them and destroy them. And you could picture Bilam and Balak in their own places, again, to be anachronistic, watching the news on Fox or CNN, and smiling, smirking, that even though they weren't able to vanquish these people, the people are doing a good enough job on themselves. And how did they do this? They did it by having the beautiful women of Moab and Midian seduce the men of Israel to the orgiastic, amoral, immoral worship of a deity known as Baal Peor. And that is immediately followed in these 9 verses by the outbreak of a plague with a death toll recorded at 24,000 people. And the plague stops only by the bold, zealous act of Pinchas, which we can discuss next week. It's at the very, very end of Parshat Balak, where Pinchas picks up a spear and skewers the leader of the tribe of Shimon, who was intimate and involved in the public worship and immorality with a Midianite princess, and he kills them both. And that stops the plague. But let's step back one more. Enemies of Israel in the early stages of their development, as described by the Torah, are not able to vanquish the people of Israel by conventional methods, nor by this unusual method of using a prophet's power of a curse. And what do they do so that they succeed in their goal, or at least partially? They get Israel to turn their back to God. And that is a story of Jewish history. No enemy directly defeats the people of Israel. God allows them success, so to speak, when we mess up. This is the story of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, the first one and the second one, and the tragedies that occurred earlier and in the middle and since then. Always you can analyze it and see if we remain faithful to God, then nobody can touch us. And if we veer from that, and I'm not talking about the religious people are saved and the non-religious people are killed. It doesn't work like that. It's a joint effort, and we're all in the same boat, and a hole in the boat is going to allow water in and drown us, regardless of under whose seat the hole is drilled. So I'm not saying now religious people this and non-religious people that. I am saying when the Jewish people, part of the Jewish people, a significant portion of the Jewish people, whatever, rebel against God, we become vulnerable to all kind of enemies from the outside, and we don't even need enemies from the outside sometimes. It happens internally. And I'm thinking of every tragic auto accident that's reported in this country, from people who fell asleep at the wheel, from a truck driver who crossed the dividing line trying to go around somebody, whatever. It just rings in your ear of, look at what we could do to ourselves, almost as if we are our worst enemy. I believe that's part of the message in the last 9 verses of Balak, which are connected to the first 95 verses. It's almost as if you were listening to this parsha being told as a story, and you smile all the way through the first 95 verses, and then comes the devastation. And at the very end, the saving point of Pinchas, to be continued next week. I have always found this sad as an indicator of how we are not behaving the way we should. And I'm talking about in our relationship with God. I'm talking also about our relationship to each other. So Bein Adam LaMakom, Bein Adam LaChaveiro gets into this picture both. and we need to relate not just to the reading of Parshat Balak, but we need to relate to the fast days that are commemorative of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, including Tisha B'Av, including Shivasar B'Tammuz, and the other two, Asara B'Tevet and Tzom Gedalia. These are the four fast days which we have the prophecy in the Navi that will in the future become festive days when the Geula, the redemption, is complete and when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt. But there are so many things that happen that it seems that this is not going to happen tomorrow. And it's primarily our fault, and better than that, since that just sounds a little destructive, it is, I believe, within our capability to do something about it. I keep talking about this, I keep writing about this, I hope, I practice what I preach, but that's not enough. Other people have to see this as well, have to see and seize opportunities to bring the Jewish people closer together within itself, and to bring them closer to God as a people, not just as individuals. And then, as God reviews the situation, so to speak, he'll say, finally, there is no reason to delay the coming of Mashiach and the rebuilding of Jerusalem and everything that goes with it. Just for your information, I really don't know how many people listen to Torah Tidbits audio and also read the hard copy of Torah Tidbits or the electronic version of Torah Tidbits, one way or the other, just for your information. Next week, Parshat Pinchas, there will not be a hard copy of Torah Tidbits. This is due to a vacation of one of the staff who is indispensable in putting out Torah Tidbits, and also other peripheral reasons, we'll say. I hope to do a show next Thursday for Parshat Pinchas. Time will tell. In the meantime, we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Balak. You are listening to Torah Tibbetz audio for Parshat Balak, and I want to move over to Shiva Sarva Tammuz in the upcoming 3 weeks. Let me say first that, let's take care of a little business first. The opening of the first half of the show has two associations with the Sedra of the Week. The opening of the second half is a little bit of a push, but decided to go with it. And as I try to encourage anyone who wants to submit an answer to the challenge of figuring out these opening pieces to each half and why they're there, can send me an email at tt@ou.org. And that, of course, includes M.G. Rochester and anybody else. So where was I? Yes. I want to say first, before I introduce anything related to the upcoming mournful period, my guiding concept is Kol Hamit'abel Al Yerushalayim. Anyone who mourns Jerusalem, zoche v'ro'eh b'simchata, he will be privileged to see its joy. And I want very much to see the joy of Yerushalayim when it is no longer contested as to who it belongs to, and when it's recognized by all people of the world as the Jewish heart and capital of the Jewish people, and when there's a Beit HaMikdash standing and functioning in the center of Yerushalayim. And therefore, I try to take seriously the mourning of the destruction. Could say the following first, aside from the four fast days which I mentioned. There are aspects of commemorating and remembering the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash all year round, and not particularly timed to anything. For example, at a wedding, the custom is to break a glass under the chuppah, and that the chatan recites and everybody sings, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, if I remember Jerusalem, if I forget Jerusalem, may my right hand lose its cunning and may my tongue cleave to my palate. A verse from Tehillim. There is a custom that many people follow to have a square area, approximately half a meter by half a meter, one amma by one amma, unpainted and unplastered near the door of their home. As if to say, until the building, the house is finished, then my house is not going to be finished. So those are things that go for all year round. And then you have the four fast days. And then you have the pair of those, from among those four, of Shivas or Batamuz, and they form matched bookends to a period which we call the 3 weeks. Now, in order to give this a little bit of a straight talk here, I have to say the following. The Mishnah speaks of five calamities that occurred on Shivas or Batamuz, specifically the breaking of the first set of tablets, which was Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction to the golden calf, the breach of the city in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, the erecting of an idol in the sanctuary, the ceasing, the secession of the Korban Tumid, the daily sacrifice, and the burning of a Sefer Torah. Five calamities are associated with Tisha B'Av. We'll talk about that when we get closer to that date. The Mishnah does not discuss the period between Shivas or Batamuz and Tisha B'Av. All it says is Mishenichnas of Mima'atim B'Simcha. As of enters, we diminish our joy. And then the Mishnah discusses the week in which Tisha B'Av falls. And, of course, Tisha B'Av itself and Shivas or Batamuz itself are fast days. The Ashkenazi world, somewhere along the line, filled in the period from Shivas or Batamuz, which I said is this Shabbat, until Tisha B'Av, a period of 3 weeks of mourning, although the beginning of that period, until Rosh Chodesh Av, is sort of calm and understated. Weddings don't take place by the Ashkenazi custom, and haircutting and shaving is not done under normal circumstances, and a diminishing of, let's say, music, which sort of follows in the wake of the custom of not having weddings, and that's about it. But the Avelut, the mournful period, begins, and there's a discussion about Shechiyona, which we don't have time to get into now, and then it intensifies from Rosh Chodesh Av, further intensifying in the week in which Tisha B'Av falls. Okay, enough said for the moment on that. Let me go back and focus on Shivas or Batamuz. Actually, I apologize for jumping a little. Let me say something about both of these events, Shivasar B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, which I call the matched bookends to the period of mourning. And what's interesting is that most of what's associated with these days has to do with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but there is one event with each of them that goes way back further in history to the birth of the Jewish nation, to the generation of the wilderness, and I'm referring to the sin of the golden calf, which is associated with Shivasar B'Tammuz, and the sin of the spies, which is associated with Tisha B'Av. In other words, the mournful period which we have come to associate with the destruction of the temples already had their imprint of tragedy from the earliest years of nationhood. And having the sin of the golden calf and the sin of the spies together, you sort of have your whole picture of Judaism there. Because the sin of the spies was an act of the Jews turning their back on God and Torah. And the sin of the spies was turning one's back on the land of Israel. And since this was the totality of the divine plan to take us out of Egypt, to give us the Torah, and to bring us to Eretz Yisrael, then way before the destructions of the temples, you have the dark nature of this three-week period in let's call it in turning one's back on God. Okay. Tachlis, practical side of Shivasar B'Tammuz. The date of Shivasar B'Tammuz this year is Shabbat. We fast on Sunday. Shivasar B'Tammuz, as well as Tzom Gedalia and Asar B'Tevet, and throw Ta'anit Esther into the set, are known as minor fast days, a misconception, a misnomer, we'll call it. You'll see why I say that. But the decision was made by a later generation of authorities to go easy in certain respects on a day like Shivasar B'Tammuz, in contrast to the tough nature of Tisha B'Av. Now, I don't know if I'm making myself understood. I again apologize. Let's look at it from a broader perspective. The Torah has one fast day. That fast day is Yom Kippur. It becomes the model of all fast days. Yom Kippur, we are not allowed to eat or drink. Yom Kippur has additional prohibitions of bathing, washing, using of lotions and cosmetics and perfumes, wearing of leather shoes, and marital relations. Those prohibitions are in addition to the prohibition of eating and drinking, and they make a complete fast day. Yom Kippur begins before sunset the night before and continues for a full 25-hour or more period. And this becomes the prototype, not the model, the prototype of a fast day. In the realm of rabbinic fast days, even as early as recorded in the Nevi'im, but not on a Torah level, we have the four fast days associated with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Among those four, only Tisha B'Av was imposed upon us in the style of Yom Kippur, meaning sunset to stars out the following night, meaning eating and drinking, and the other prohibitions in effect. And we'll talk more about Tisha B'Av as we get near it. All the other fast days, Shivasar B'Tammuz, this coming Sunday included, are reduced in their severity by rabbinic decree, And the rabbis have the power to do that since they were the ones who require us to fast. And they said, we'll go easy on you. Dawn till stars out, you don't have to start the night before. That's a major thing. It knocks 12 hours or so off of the fast, and you don't have to go to bed hungry at night. So that's one thing. Second, the fast will be eating and drinking only, not allowed. All the others are not prohibited. And a third leniency is that people who have difficulty fasting because of physical condition, like pregnant women, nursing women, generally weak constitution people, don't have to do the full fast. They should consult a rabbinic authority, explain their condition. If it includes a consultation with a doctor who knows what he's talking about, that would be good also. And they are released from those fast days. The bottom line, a healthy person who is not seriously affected negatively by a fast, everybody is weaker, everybody feels it, pretty much everybody, but I'm talking about something more than the usual reaction to a fast day. Anybody that's a healthy person is expected, male and female, from the age of 12 for girls and the age of 13 for boys, to fast on all the public fast days, including this Sunday, Shivasar B'Tammuz. A person who knows by his experience already of fasting on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av that he will feel, he or she will feel faint, dizzy, have to lie down, can't sit up, blurry vision, does not have to fast on Shivasar B'Tammuz, even if they have to fast on Tisha B'Av, until things get a little bit more serious. I mean, but that, again, needs consultation with your LOR, your local Orthodox rabbi. But that's the nature of Shivasar B'Tammuz. Unfortunately, some people wave their hand in dismissal because of these leniencies. But the point is, the Shulchan Aruch says, notwithstanding these leniencies, a healthy person must fast. And one who doesn't is called a poreitz geder, tearing down a fence. And in the language of Kohelet, a snake should bite him, which is sort of an unusual term. But it means you gotta fast. Immediately, we should also say the following. Fasting on a fast day is an obligation for a healthy person, but it is not the essence and core of the day. I'm not talking about Yom Kippur, that's a unique situation. I am focusing now on Shivasar B'Tammuz. As much as I said until now that a healthy person must fast on Sunday, you all should know that fasting is considered secondary, auxiliary to the mood of the day, to the feeling of the day, to the introspection, to the pondering, to the process of repentance that can bring about a change in these fast days to become the festive days that they are meant to become with the Geula Shlema, the complete redemption. So it's not like, not a lot of eat and drink, so I sit with a paperback novel and I while away the day, fall asleep, take a long nap, day's over, fast is over. No, I gotta spend time on that day, and on all days, but especially on that day, to really ponder what it means that 40 days after we received the Torah and witnessed unbelievable miracles in the process, that there was reveling with the golden calf. However you want to interpret it and whoever started it, the actual death toll in the aftermath of the golden calf was 3,000. which means that less than 0.5% of the adult male population worshipped slash reveled in whatever, the calf. But the rest of the people saw what was going on and did not get up and say, this is wrong, you can't do it. There's a lot to ponder. Moshe Rabbeinu's reaction, coming down after 40 days and 40 nights of being taught by God the entire content of the Torah and how to explain it to the people, and coming down with our first physical down payment, the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, the two tablets engraved by God with the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, and instead of giving it to the people, he smashes it, or they fall from his hands and break different interpretations. That's something to ponder. That a daily sacrifice that was continuous from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and that generation in the wilderness, all the way through a Shivasar Batamuz under Babylonian siege, and it stopped then, that's something to ponder. What it means, and what it means for us today, and a person's davening of Shacharit and Mincha, which correspond to those daily Tamidim, the daily sacrifices, should get into our thinking process also. These are precious prayer experiences which we need to take seriously. And I'm not leaving our Vita out of the picture either. That a Sefer Torah is burned, and what that means. And if the Mishnah records a long time ago a Sefer Torah burns, we know that Sifrei Torah have been burned throughout Jewish history as an attempt or a sign of the hatred that Jews and Judaism is held in the eyes of people around the world, not everybody, but in many people, and it represents the total antithesis to Torah being a living Torah and a guide for our lives. And there it is, going up in smoke and ash. And the erecting of an idol in the sanctuary of the Beit HaMikdash, if that doesn't boggle the mind, then work on it so that it will boggle the mind, because it is mind-boggling. Let me break now for a song about Yerushalayim, and that Yerushalayim and its breach, not just the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, but the entrance of foreign forces into the city of Yerushalayim, is something which we still mourn and fear today. Not a song a prayer, which we have been uttering over and over again for a very, very long time. May we see it fulfilled in our time, that Yerushalayim will be not only reunited, but rebuilt in the best possible way, and all good things should come in its wake. That should be our thoughts on a fast day as well. Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.